Freedom News Hour with Walt Thiessen, Jake Town, and Gene DiNardo. Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds?
Hello and welcome to the Freedom News Hour. I'm here today with my co-host Jane Horvath, and also I believe Gene DiNardo will be joining us shortly. Today our normal lead host Walt Thiessen is on vacation, so he won't be available today. But we have an action-packed news show for you. We'll have on a congressional candidate from City of New York. Dan O'Connor, he will be joining us in just a few moments, and there's lots of news going on in the world today. We have all the uproar in Syria. We have the Iraq war ending. We have the Republican presidential race getting very close to the first vote. And we also have Congress up to their normal shenanigans. So let me start off with the recent polls in from Iowa. That's quite a surprise. Newt Gingrich has taken the lead at 22% to 21%, but second place is Congressman Ron Paul, who we talk about quite on the show. And he's followed by the rest of the other candidates, such as Mitt Romney, 16%, Michelle Bachmann at 11%, Rick Perry has faded to 9%, Rick Santorum at 8%, John Huntsman at 5%, and also Gary Johnson at 1%. And what this means is Gingrich's lead has decreased from close to 30%. And is really in a statistical dead heat with Congressman Ron Paul as they go into the last debate, which is at 9 p.m. Tonight. And I believe Jane has some news on the former governor of Arizona, Gary Johnson, who has been polling not so well, but has also been left out of all these Republican debates since the very beginning.
Oh, yes. Gary Johnson has sadly been excluded from most, if, I think almost all the major Republican debates, and he has, in a recent interview, said that he has been hung out to dry by the GOP establishment, and that's the reason he's likely to leave the party and run as a libertarian. So it looks like there could be another option in the presidential election, which is always good to have more options.
Yeah, sure is. And Gary Johnson has a very pro-liberty minded. He is not just against things such as the Patriot Act and the wars abroad, but also has stances on some things, for instance, drugs and abortion, things that I guess are typically what I would say would be Democrat characteristics is what he has. And I always kind of wondered why he didn't just enter into the Democratic primary and run against President Barack Obama, not just because of those views, but also, and he would probably have a very low chance of winning, but I think he would be able to get the message out quite a bit better. And in his current competition in the Republican primary, unfortunately, the mindset of a lot of these Republican voters is just not very pro-liberty-minded.
Well, also, I mean, Gary Johnson definitely epitomizes the Libertarian Party, you know, platform, what their stated beliefs are, I think, much more so than their last offering, Bob Barr, back in 2008.
Oh, yeah, Bob Barr was a bit of a disaster for the Libertarian Party, if you ask me. And I think, obviously, the Libertarian Party has their own candidate selection process, but I think it would be more or less a shoe-in for I think it would be kind of a shoe-in for the Libertarian Party, although they've been known for making bad decisions in the past, so hopefully they get that done right. And that extra 1%, I would say, almost certainly would go to Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But, So the kind of the big surprise or the latest flare in the race is this Newt Gingrich fellow, and it's very that fellow was Speaker of the House back in the 1990s, and a lot of the Republicans seem to have completely forgotten what he used to do. Like, yeah, he was Speaker of the House, but he also left under very, very suspicious circumstances. He resigned while he was Speaker and had to pay $300,000 fine. So roughly 2 years of his salary he had to fork over so that they wouldn't say what he did, and he resigned. So I'm pretty sure we're going to have, and the regular, his marital, status changes are pretty infamous. His very large credit line at Tiffany's is well known. He took over $1 million as, he called himself a historian, but he was in fact a lobbyist for Freddie Mac, which was involved in the whole housing crisis, so he helped foment that and give Freddie Mac access to people on the Hill. And there's just kind of like a whole slew of things. He stood on healthcare on the absolute wrong side. And here he is, kind of reincarnated, and he's been the latest. First he had, I think it was Rick Perry jumped out in front. And then you had Bachman out in front for a little bit, and then you had...
that was terrifying.
Yeah, and who was the next? Oh, Herman Cain. He's left the race. he came in next, and then you had Newt. So hopefully Newt fades just like the rest of them. And the folks, I would say, that have been staying the most steady in the polling has been Congressman Ron Paul. And also, as far as polling goes, I would have to say Mitt Romney's done a fairly steady results as the election rolls on, but it's the Iowa caucuses will be January 3rd, so not that all that far off after right after the holidays. So we will be listening for news from there, and I believe the New Hampshire primary is January the 10th following that. So let's go on to other news. The food stamp, the latest amount of food stamps came out and increased as of December 1st to 46.3 million Americans now living off of food stamps. That roughly is about more than one in seven Americans is living off of food stamps and getting payments for it, which is just a figure that I find every time it increases is just unbelievable. Like back in 2008, it was roughly half of where it is right now. Still costs quite a bit, but this is something that runs in the billions of dollars, roughly $6 billion a month. So if you add that up, you're talking $72 to $80 billion a year in federal spending to run the food stamp program. So no signs of the economy opening up there. And as we mostly know, the whole job market really hasn't picked up nationwide as well. Let's go on to some good news. The United States military marked the end to nearly nine bloody years in Iraq. And as the administration would have you believe, is that we're leaving of our own free will. But the fact of the matter is the Iraqis kicked us out. They refused to sign what's known as the SOFA agreement, or Status of Forces Agreement, that gives permission for American forces to be based there. So pretty much all the American soldiers will leave. They've been... told to get the heck out of town. There are still civilian contractors remaining behind, and of course the vast embassy that the U.S. has built in the city of Baghdad. But I have to say, overall, it's a very good thing. We're spending far too much, over, I believe it was 4,500 American soldiers lost their lives. That began in a war that was supposedly about weapons of mass destruction and some false lies about Al-Qaeda being in Iraq. So it's kind of finally good news to be over and done with that at long last. I guess how many years, Jane? 8 or 9 years?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time. So almost took a decade. We've been still in Afghanistan for over a decade. And
was that 2003 was the invasion, right?
Yeah, and I think Iraq was 2003. We went in, we started bombing Afghanistan in 2001. We didn't send any land troops there until the beginning of 2002. But for all intents and purposes, the Afghanistan war is the longest-running war in U.S. history, although some people, and I would include myself in that, believe that the Iraq war was really kind of running from the Persian Gulf War in 1991. Through today, and there was just, you know, kind of what a lot of people don't realize, and, you know, comedians, the only way that they would find out about it would be like comedians like Jon Stewart, because we were constantly bombing Iraq during the 1990s.
Right, and the military's been there since, 1990? There's continuous deployment in and around Iraq since 90.
Oh, sure, yeah. We were containing them for a while in Saudi Arabia, and then Saudi Arabia, for political reasons, had to kick out U.S. forces since they were on the Holy Land. And when the U.S. forces were kicked out, they very conveniently just crossed the border in Iraq and took it over. And it's kind of unknown what will happen next, but there's quite a bit of tumult going on in the world, some of which we'll ask our guest, Dan O'Connor, about including Iran. The Republicans' candidates, with the exception of Ron Paul and Gary Johnson, are beating the war drums, so to speak, to go after Iran. The leader, Newt Gingrich, is very vehement that we should go in and take care of him and attack him. The Democrat administration, the Obama administration, Joe Biden has been, and Vice President has been on shows such as Rachel Maddow talking about how he is also, the administration also wants to do anything that they need to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons, including attacking them. And Iran itself has been under economic sanctions since the Clinton administration. So really the U.S. has been trying to pretty much sanctions are acts of war. The U.S. has banned almost all trade with Iran since the Clinton administration, and in recent years we've been pressuring every other international country to not aid Iran, which is a third world country, has no way, even though it's oil rich, it has no way to actually even process the oil. It's a very rough, overall, it's a very, very poor country. It's also very tribal, just like the Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's not a good thing that we're over there.
Well, at least we're giving them some new technology, you know, with the captured RQ-170 Sentinel, the drone.
Oh, yeah. We talked for our listeners, we covered that last week. Iran is talking about how they are taking a very close look at it. There's even some reports from the administration that they think that the captured plane is kind of a fake, because it does appear to be in very good condition. But at any rate, we did lose a spy plane. The CIA was piloting it and lost it. I think we lost another drone recently. The drones were also in the news. They were used domestically in the United States for the first time out west to assist in a arrest on a so for the first time really a military or spy equipment was used on American civilians, completely unconnected with terrorism in any form or fashion, but it was connected with some type of crime. So that's not really a good sign to see those things deployed against U.S. citizens, but we'll have a chance to ask Dan O'Connor about this right after we come back from our break here on the Progressive Radio Network. And we'll have lots more to talk also after the break. We'll be talking about a $1 trillion House Republican bill, and we'll be interviewing Dan O'Connor when we get back. Welcome back to the Freedom News Hour. Right now we have Dan O'Connor, Democrat for U.S. Congress in New York City's 12th District. is joining us once again to talk about the economy and the Occupy Wall Street movement. Dan, are you with us?
I am. Hey, Jake, thanks for having me on again.
Hey, thank you for joining us. How's the campaign going?
Campaign is going fantastic. You know, we launched it around the summertime and learned a lot over the past few months, specifically just being engaged with the community, walking around district, talking to the people throughout the community, talking to the voters, getting a feel for what their concerns are. And the real encouraging part is that I've learned that people throughout the district are very unhappy right now. And that's definitely to my benefit because specifically, I'd say the most outstanding issue of people throughout the district when I talk to them is that they're very unhappy with the bailouts. My opponent supported the bailouts, and my district borders on Wall Street. It's very much a middle-income, lower-income family district all along the water in Brooklyn overlooking Wall Street. People in my district didn't get any bailouts, but you know, trillions and trillions of dollars were injected into the banks, and both Democratic and Republican and all the voters in my district are really unhappy with it.
Yeah, the TARP bailout, you know, is bailing out the banks at the expense of the taxpayer and using the Federal Reserve to pretty much just throw money at the problem and bail out these banks, which continues really to this day. Like just I think a week ago we were talking about on our show the dollar swaps that the Fed set up with foreign central banks.
Yep.
Where pretty much they are just taking our currency and using it to plug holes in the European banking system.
Right.
I was wondering, could you tell our listeners a little bit more, if they're not aware, really, what the Federal Reserve does and why it's so evil?
And that's, yeah, and that's a big part of my campaign, you know, especially being in New York and being near the New York Federal Reserve Bank, which is the biggest of the various Federal Reserves across the country. When I'm out there and I'm talking to these people, I mean, the fact is not a whole lot of them are aware of the way it works, but once I begin telling them about it and talking to them about it, a lot of them, you know, just are absolutely enraged. And that's the thing about the Federal Reserve, you know, for so many decades, it's operated in complete secrecy, and most Americans have no idea about its, you know, the way it works. And the more people that learn and are aware of it, the better. So I'm not here in New York attacking the banks, but I am very strongly attacking the Federal Reserve.
Sure, and also, can you tell us, have you had any interactions with the Occupy Wall Street movement, the protesters, which are, I'm not quite sure where they're at right now. I think the Zuccotti Park was closed down, but if you could talk on that for a moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great because, as I mentioned, Wall Street borders on my district, so it's just a walk for me to get over there. And I went for the first time probably about 2 months ago, and I was just amazed by the turnout and how many people were down there. There were just thousands of people swarming the whole area. And I was just basically just walking around and talking to people, and, you know, those who wanted to talk, I kind of pointed in the direction of the Federal Reserve Bank and kind of educated them a little bit on it because most of them weren't aware of the way that the Federal Reserve came to be and how it was created by the big banks in order to serve the big banks. And then, you know, but the Occupy Wall Street movement in general, it's just a lot of disgruntled citizens all had their own grievances. They're holding up different signs for different causes, and there's certainly not one theme, you know, there's not one complaint amongst these people down there. It's a handful of all different types of complaints. But if I did have to highlight one general sentiment, it would just be discontent. They're all very unhappy with the system. Then I went again about a month later, and it kind of had died down. They had cleared things out. The government cleared a lot of the people out. And then I went again about 2 weeks later, and there were several hundred people, and we shot a little video.
Hi, Dan. This is Jane. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Jane.
Question. So you shot a video. I had a question for you, but I want to hear more about that video.
Sure. Actually, Adam Kokesh was in town, and he was at Occupy Wall Street. He was doing a tour of all the different Occupy movements around the country. So I got on his show and kind of just walked around the park a little bit and spoke to some people. I identified some people, residents of my district, and, you know, we engaged a little bit. And it's probably about 10 of us talking. And basically, you know, these are Democratic voters in my district, and they agree with the majority of my positions. You know, they're all against the Patriot Act, and they're against the bailouts, and you know, they don't want the federal government in the marriage issue or the abortion issue, and you know, a lot of them are just sick of the wars in general.
Some things a lot of us can get behind. How do you respond to the blanket statement to, say, end corporate greed? Can you turn that around and maybe explain the Fed, things like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, us in the Liberty Movement, we're just as critical of the corruption as the Democratic voters are. And this is why our message is very appealing to them. Because when I'm down there talking to the people who occupy Wall Street, you know, they're complaining about corporations in bed with the government and the favors for the corporations, and I'm on the same page as them. And in fact, the Federal Reserve Bank is, in many ways, it's the essence of corporatism. It's the essence of corporate greed, because and it's the Federal Reserve that feeds into it. It actually encourages it and facilitates it.
Right, so spreading that message.
And corporatism, by definition, you know, it's the government in bed with private industry, and that's exactly what the Federal Reserve represents.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the whole Occupy Wall Street movement has even though they may, if you watch the media, might at first glance not really have anything in common with the Tea Party, but the Tea Party actually, one of their chief complaints was the bailout and the whole idea of, you know, the government taking all this money and giving it away to these banks to throw these, you know, pretty much just throwing taxpayer money away.
Right.
And I think that the Occupy Wall Street folks, again, I think you're correct. I think they all have diverse views. They're not can't really be pigeonholed into one certain thing. But from my interactions here locally with the local Occupy movement, it's
right.
What Jane was saying. Like when you see a sign that says, like, you know, end corporate greed, I think it's important to highlight that, you know, the corporations, you know, they supply us with all the products and services that we, you know, use in our daily lives. And even the protesters, you know, with these corporate greed signs, you know, they're wearing brand name jeans, wearing brand name sneakers. You know, these are the things that we have as part of a civilization that services each other, really. But I think it's important to kind of stress that what you're saying is that the government is really the whole problem. They're the ones that are giving special benefits to special groups, and it's exporting jobs away from the U.S., and it's really kind of creating this whole job situation. And I wanted to ask you, what would you do when you get elected and you get in there to D.C., what's like the first thing that Dan O'Connor would do to create jobs or address the unemployment?
First thing, well, look, I'm not bold in thinking that a freshman congressman in D.C. is gonna shake up the system by himself. But what will separate me from the other Democrats out there is that I'm not going to vote with the party line all the time. And this is what a lot of the Democrats do. They always vote with the party line no matter what. And the fact is most Americans are sick of the bipartisanship. They don't like the Republicans always doing the same thing, the Democrats doing the same thing. So this is how I'm going to separate myself from the typical Democrat in Washington. But to get back to your question about, you know, what I would do, what I would propose to help the economy, well, first of all, I'm going to bring attention to the Federal Reserve Bank, and because they're the reason that the economy is so bad right now. They created the bubble, the Federal Reserve, by providing excess credit to the market, artificially low interest rates. They created the bubble. They caused the housing bubble.
The housing bubble.
The housing bubble, absolutely. You know, in 2002, between 2002 and 2007, average house, you know, cost of homes in this area doubled. Suddenly Americans just wanted to buy homes. No, this is a result of Federal Reserve policy. And this is, you know, what caused all these houses to be overinflated, and this is why a lot of Americans out there are stuck with their homes, or they're stuck with these bad mortgages now. So I'm going to bring a lot of attention to the Federal Reserve Bank, and it's a bipartisan issue now. You know, Democratic voters are unhappy with the Fed, and Republican voters are unhappy with the Fed. So I'm confident that I can continue to, you know, bring a greater amount of attention to the Federal Reserve Bank, and I'm confident that we can put out effective legislation in combating the Fed.
Yeah, that's very good news to hear. And I wanted to also ask you a little bit, kind of your thoughts on the Iraq war officially ending today, and your thoughts on that.
Right. I did not get a chance to read all the details of the report, but I'm still pretty familiar with what's been going on out there. And I think it's pretty much the same usual smoke and mirrors. I know that not all of the troops are being withdrawn. There's going to be a very large presence of Americans in Iraq for the immediate and foreseeable future. So however many, I don't know what the reported number is of how many people are being withdrawn, but I imagine it's just a political tactic for, you know, Obama to kind of gain support.
I think it's true that,
you know the official number on how many are being withdrawn and how many will remain?
Yeah, I think thousands are leaving. I think you're correct in that there will be some. I believe there's only going to be about 150 or so soldiers left behind. I do believe there's going to be a very large amount, as in thousands, of civilian contractors from
absolutely.
The U.S.
Yeah,
be over there.
Contractors will certainly be there making money.
Right, and from Reuters, like, you know, at the height of the Iraq War, we had 170,000 troops in 500 bases all over Iraq, and you know, we lost 4,500 troops. I think we're now down to about 4,000 soldiers, and they are leaving really by December 31st. And I think that, you know, what the administration is kind of taking credit for it, but what we were just covering on the show is that it really just came down to the Iraq people kicking us out. The Iraqis, both the Sunni and the Shiites, they can't agree about much, but they can agree to get the Americans out. And what they did was they refused to sign the Status of Forces Agreement, which is expiring, so that's leading to the, you know, the mass exodus of our soldiers from there. I wanted to ask you, you know, what are your thoughts on the Afghanistan war? Do you agree what we did over there? Do you agree with this whole war on terror thing? And what do you think we should do now that we're already over there?
Right. I think that the sooner we can get out of there, the sooner we can get those troops home, the better. I think that the current, you know, Republican candidates, Mitt Romney and Gingrich, these guys certainly have no intentions on bringing any significant change to that region. You know, I think we should have been out of there a long time ago. I think it's there's a lot of other special interests involved in that region, and it has nothing to do with fighting terror, and it certainly doesn't help with the terror situation, you know, quote-unquote terrorism situation. In fact, it's really just agitating a lot of the Afghanis more and more. The longer we stay there, the more they want to attack our soldiers out there. And, you know, Osama bin Laden specifically said many years ago that what he, you know, his main goals are to bankrupt America and to, you know, kill as many American soldiers as possible and, you know, take away the, and to help contribute to taking away the freedoms that we love in this country. And he succeeded in all those things. You know, today they just had the debate in Congress, you know, talking about taking away, you know, Americans suspected of terrorism and being able to detain them and send them to, you know, Guantanamo Bay. This goes against everything that this country was built on and everything that this stands for. And it's, you know, we're watching this country fall apart. So Bin Laden is succeeding in that way.
Yeah, even though he's dead. Yeah, the military bill that you brought up, it's I guess it's an umbrella bill that's trying to get passed to keep funding the Department of Defense, which will be at yet another record amount if approved. The President, the Obama administration already approved the largest military budget in the history of mankind last year, and it looks like they're going to add a little bit more to that this year,
right,
even with the Iraq war ending.
Right.
But I believe today it already passed 93-7 in the Senate.
Right.
And I think late last night it passed in the U.S. House. I'm not sure how your the person that you're running against voted on that particular bill. But one of the provisions, like you just said, is the whole indefinite detention. And I think what a lot of folks don't realize is that, yeah, when you read the actual section of the bill, it can be used against American citizens as well as anyone. I mean, the blanket terms that are in that bill are kind of like associated or sheltered or help out or suspected of helping. So it's very un-American. And I think it also goes against our Constitution. I was wondering if you could, I think it's like the Fourth Amendment or something like that has it in there where, you know, you can't be indefinitely detained for the rest of your life without, you know, without a trial. You have a right to trial by jury. And I think that's something that the folks in Washington, D.C. have just completely forgotten about. And I was wondering, you know, if you go around, I'm not sure if you do talk to the people on the street about the Constitution, but, you know, are most people that you talk to, if you do, aware that, you know, it's just, you know, as far as the administration goes, whether it's Republican or Democrat, it's not really followed at all?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And this is a big part of the reason why I'm running as a Democrat, you know, is because these types of issues are certainly more of a concern to Democratic voters than they are to Republicans. And that's not to say that there aren't Republicans that are not concerned, but I know that the Democrats in my district are extremely concerned about this. They do not like the idea of, you know, any sort of invasion on their civil liberties. They don't like the idea of the government, you know, coming into people's homes and breaking into homes without a search warrant and tapping their phones. And this is very, very unpopular with Democratic voters in general and in my district. And this is certainly one of the most pressing issues in America right now, by far. And I think you're right. It certainly violates the Fourth Amendment. But I think it's probably a violation of the Fifth or Sixth or Seventh or Eighth Amendment as well. I have to look at the bill more in depth, but this is one of the biggest violations of the Constitution that I could even think of.
And there's a surprising number of nays. I mean, it's mind-boggling with all of the warnings from the ACLU and so many other groups about how this shouldn't pass. How do you think we missed it? How did so many people vote for it? What do you think?
Well, I think, in my opinion, I think a lot of it, you know, has to do with the, you know, voting with the party. I think Democrats in Washington, D.C. are, you know, often afraid to vote against the party, so they always do. My opponent, over 20 years, she's voted with the party 95% of the time. And
it's all one party then if they all took the same side.
And the Republicans, they don't want to go against the party, so it's pretty much back and forth. I just finished a great book called Not Invited to the Party by James Bennett, which I highly recommend, and it really just talks about the two-party duopoly in this country. But the statistic that it mentions is that 90% of Americans don't like the two-party duopoly.
Oh, yeah, but the two-party system kind of has a stranglehold on the entire electoral system. So I think that, you know, the path that you're taking, especially in New York City, running as a Democrat, should be lauded. Just, you know, when you get there, remember that it's the people that put you there, not the the DNC.
Exactly, yep. And that's part of what I'm trying to do here, you know, by running as a Democrat. So granted, you know, they agree with a lot of my positions. At the same time, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to yell and scream at these Democrats when they try to send or allow our troops to go overseas without a declaration of war by the Congress.
Yeah, and speaking of which, you know, back to foreign policy for just a moment. There was a lot of uproar. You know, we had the whole Libya thing where NATO, which included the United States, we were supposedly there to enforce a no-fly zone in Libya, but instead of just enforcing a no-fly zone, we ended up bombing the country. We ended up killing plenty of civilians along with Gaddafi's military targets. These days, we kind of have a little bit of the same thing going on in Syria. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to follow what's going on in Syria. You have people from the Syrian army defecting, you know, and trying to protect the people were assaulted really at by rallies by government troops and slaughtered, and now these army defectors are kind of fighting back. I was wondering, you know, what do you think the role of the United States should play in this, and what kind of do you think is going on over there?
Well, I'll tell you what the biggest problem is out in that region of the world in regards to the U.S., and it's the fact that, you know, we have so many troops in so many places, and we have our CRA running all different types of missions all around the world that the American people aren't even aware of. The foreign policy, you know, of our federal government is so ambiguous. There's no clear policy. It's really scattered. It's inconsistent. It's not well managed at all. Money is being wasted constantly. Military contractors are, you know, winning billions and billions of dollars. And, you know, it really needs to be a more concise and a more clear foreign policy enacted by the legislators out there. And the best starting point is to obey the Constitution, and that only the Congress can declare war. And a second step would be to look more into what the CIA is doing and not allowing, you know, the CIA to run their own covert missions without, you know, oversight by the Congress.
Right. I just mentioned earlier before we brought you on that the I guess it was the CIA, but a Predator drone was used domestically for a completely unrelated with terrorism, but it was used domestically somewhere out on the West Coast for the first time ever to assist in an arrest. It's just kind of alarming to see that type of kind of like Big Brother stuff being played out, because obviously I don't think, you know, using a Predator drone is cost-effective or necessary to deal with any of this stuff. But let's see. Dan, do you have enough time to stay with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. I think the station is indicating to me that it's about time to go on break, so we'll bring you back right after the break.
Okay. We're right here.
And welcome back to the Freedom News Hour. We have Dan O'Connor, Democrat running for United States Congress in New York City, District 12 with us. And Dan, I think Jane has another question for you.
Yeah. Hi. On your website, I noticed you talk about transparency, which is definitely very important. And you want to keep your constituents informed. Exactly how would you implement that?
Okay. Well, I've definitely recently looked at a few of the ways some of these other congressional representatives and senators maintain their communication with their constituents. And, you know, I've seen a few good ideas here and a few good ideas there. For the most part, they're really lacking. It's not very transparent. I have specifically the full intention to post all votes and all legislation right on the homepage, and I think more and more people, representatives, are doing that nowadays. So everything would be up on the website, and you know, constant emails, constant letters out to the district, and
make yourself more accessible.
Yeah. You know, my opponent, Nidia Velasquez, she's been in office for a really long time, and you know, it's weird because she recently just, you know, I just registered with FEC, and since then she's been flooding her you know, constituents with direct mail. But you know, I inquired into it a little bit further, and she had hardly done that at all in years before that. So yeah, I think, you know, transparency is certainly an issue, and you know, I think you know, I think Nidia Velasquez, my opponent, is certainly becoming more transparent as a result of me being a new competitor.
Yeah. Well, when is the primary in New York?
Yeah, it's next September. It's early September. And
okay, so
as I mentioned, you know, the unique thing about my district is that it's 90% Democrat. So, you know, the primary is certainly the main focal point of the election, and there's generally not much of a challenge on the Republican side.
No, 90%. That's going to be quite a primary.
Yeah, she usually just, you know, annihilates all the other competitors.
Well, I know from personal experience it takes a lot of time and money to run a congressional campaign. I was wondering if you could tell our listeners where they can learn more about you, and also if they feel so inclined to donate and help out someone that's running with a very pro-liberty message.
Excellent. Yeah, the website's danoconnor2012.com. I can take donations straight through there. There's you know, a mailing P.O. box right on the donation link. There's also at the top right corner of the website, there's an area to enter in your email address and contact info, so that if you're interested in volunteering, we'll certainly contact you. We're in the process of updating the website, so we're going to have a new polished up website in about 2 weeks. We're pretty excited about that. We've been going through the numbers a lot, and we're getting, you know, all the data throughout the district now, so we're ready to start running a real, you know, full blast professional grassroots campaign early January. I'm actually going to be partaking in the parade in Chinatown for Chinese New Year in early next year. Pretty exciting. I think I mentioned that I speak the two major dialects of Chinese, and I've been very much engaged with the Chinese community, and they're real supportive. And early next year, I'm going to begin branching out to the other parts of the district, Williamsburg, Queens, Brooklyn, all along the water over there.
Yeah, we certainly wish you a lot of luck, and
yeah,
you know, definitely talking with Chinese helps out quite a bit with some of those voters. So
yeah, there's 100,000 Chinese people in the district, you know, and it's going to be a big focal point in the campaign, but I'm certainly going to get out to the other areas as well. And, you know, we're real optimistic. So, yeah, anyone interested in getting involved, please check out the website, danoconnor2012.com. And, yeah, I'd love to get on again sometime in the future with you guys.
Hey, well, thanks so much for being on our show. We much appreciate your time. And, again, best of luck.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and I think we also have Gene joining us back again. Gene, are
you
there?
I got to apologize. I got hung up at work, and then I got into some of the worst traffic I've ever seen, and I was going crazy trying to get here, but it just didn't happen. So.
Hey, no worries. We have Jane has been helping me out, and we've been talking to Dan for a little bit, so we haven't been lonely. But,
doing the best over here.
Yeah, I figured you guys would do a great job. So.
Yeah, we were talking about the Iowa primaries for a bit, what's going on with the U.S. military, and one of the major topics that I should have brought up while we had Dan on was the House Republicans have rolled out a, see if this sounds familiar, a 1,200-page spending measure for $1 trillion that covers hundreds of government programs in a bid to force U.S. lawmakers to wrap up their work for the year. So in other words, so they can go home for Christmas.
Yeah, which is what the primary...
They are, if they pass the bill, it will increase pressure on the Democrat-controlled Senate to accept it, as well as the Republicans' version of the payroll tax cut. The Democrats have been holding up the legislation on concerns that the approval would ensure the House recess, which would get them to approve more concessions. So does that sound like anything that's happened in the past?
Yeah, this is the small government party, right?
Right, 12, right.
1,200 pages of budget. Yeah, I know the in the payroll tax cut, which they've been making more complicated every day, they included the, you guys probably covered this, but the pipeline project.
No. Go right ahead.
Yeah, they wanted to push that through, of course, and which it had a some streamlined permit system, and, you know, of course, they do a lot of eminent domain when they do pipelines, so they wanted to throw that in. And that was one of the major, I know the... the Democrats had objected to that, which I think they should. I mean, all these bills, they complicate them and add way more than push their little projects through when they know the other party wants something badly. So that's a tough one.
Yeah, this Bloomberg article that I'm reading has a representative of Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, so he's actually from the Republican Party. He said that lawmakers will be asked to vote on legislation that they don't even have enough time to read.
Yeah, 1,200 pages, right.
He said, quote, it goes against a lot of what we said we're going to do, unquote. Mm-hmm. And I find that kind of hilarious because when John Boehner, when Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House, they were doing the exact same thing. The whole Obamacare program was pushed through without being able to read it, and the same thing, the major budget, major spending bills were just passed on through.
Yeah, I don't think they're aware of a lot of stuff they put through, and I kind of wonder, you know, it'd be interesting to find out what they use, what method they use when a bill comes up. Say this one is 1,200 pages, obviously that would be a tough read even in a couple days, and you know, more like a week, and, you know, somebody must summarize it for them, or, you know, how do they know what they're voting on?
Well, they probably don't, and that's part of the reason we're in this mess today. What I find especially hysterical is the Republican Party, you know, they came out with this, you know, when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House back in the 1990s, they had, like, the Contract with America, which they completely violated when they got into power. But last year, the Republicans came out with the Pledge to America to help them win in the 2010 elections. And part of that pledge was, and I quote, "We will end the practice of packaging unpopular bills with must-pass legislation, and instead we will advance major legislation one issue at a time," unquote.
Right.
And, you know, one of the main gripes that they had when the Democrats had the majority is that the Democrats were just, you know, pressing on things through without reading them. And now the Republicans are in charge, and they're doing the exact same thing.
Exactly.
So it's complete and utter hypocrisy.
Yeah, things don't really change much, and I don't tell you the truth. I don't see things changing much in the next presidential election. I mean, you have to admit there's small things that change, but the large picture kind of remains the same, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, we'll have to see. The Iowa caucuses are coming up, and we were just commenting earlier how Ron Paul is showing up practically in a tie for first right now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
Gingrich is at 22%, Paul's at 21%, and our other favorite, Gary Johnson.
Oh, don't forget Gary Johnson.
He's expected
to announce he's going to run on the Libertarian ticket.
Yep. So
oh,
we
is
were
he
just
really?
Saying, Yeah, so if he pulls out, his support should, I would think, go to Ron Paul, which will put him in an exact tie with for that poll for whatever it's worth. But the caucus procedures are a little bit more complicated than just a straight-out vote, and I think that if there's bad weather or something like that, Ron Paul has a very good chance of not just taking second place, but of winning the whole thing, which would be
that would be phenomenal. And I would think the media would have to pay attention at that point because
they haven't paid attention so far.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I mean, all they've been talking about is Newt this, Newt that, and I'm really surprised that the numbers are so close and they haven't mentioned Ron. Oh, go ahead.
I say thank goodness for the internet. I mean, without all of the forums online promoting Ron Paul, more people would probably believe the mainstream media. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think, I don't know, I chalk it up to the internet and that method of transferring information.
Right. I think you're right. I think that makes a huge difference. And, the media has so much control and it's really amazing, you know, the amount of control they have. And, you know, they've single-handedly, this whole Republican primary thing is really interesting because the media has had a lot to do in, you know, putting down a lot of these guys that just shoot to the top and Kane, you know, the latest, and then they pummel them down to the bottom just as fast.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
The media tells you one thing, but then you go online and you see so many people that are so passionate about these causes, and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't match up.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So, yeah, the media can't fool us anymore.
Yep.
Maybe not.
Hey, well, Gina, I'm not sure. Do you have any other news topics that you wanted to cover?
Well, I don't know if you covered the so-called end of the Iraq War, the speech by Obama or anything like that, or...
Yeah, we did cover that, but we didn't talk much about the speech from Obama on the Iraq War. So,
well, there were a couple interesting quotes I can go through them right here. He says, as your commander in chief, and on behalf of a grateful nation, I'm proud to finally say these two words. And then he said, welcome home. He called it a historic moment. He had some other interesting things to say. He said, we remember the early days. The American units had streaked across the sands and skies of Iraq, Obama said. In battles from Nasser Iya to Karbala to Baghdad, American troops broke the back of a brutal dictator in less than a month. And he goes on to say, we know all too well the heavy cost. Nearly 4,500 Americans have made the ultimate sacrifice, including 202 fallen heroes from here. He was at Fort Bragg is where he made the speech. 202, he said. And here's an interesting paragraph. For all of the challenges that our nation faces, you remind us that there's nothing that we Americans can't do when we stick together. It's why the U.S. military is the most respected institution in our land. It's why you, the 9/11 generation, have earned your place in history. And he concluded with, I am proud of you. There's also in the same article some interesting graphs. The cost of the war, starting in 2003, billions of dollars per year, about $50 billion, peaked in 2008 at $140 billion, and then it dropped down to like 2011. Looks like it's about $40 billion currently. The troop deaths in Iraq, they started in 2003 at about 100 per month, and they kind of went up and down through the years, and they peaked in 2007 at, looks like, about 150 per month, dropped back down in 2011, looks like they averaged about 50 per month, and Afghanistan was considerably lower than that, below 20 per month until 2009, where it equaled the deaths per month of the Iraq War at about 75 or 80. 2010, it equaled the deaths in Iraq at about 100, looks like about 100 per month. And it kind of stuck with Iraq through 2011 and actually looks like it surpassed Iraq in 2011. So where we left off in Iraq, we're taking over in Afghanistan, and I don't know how many, Jake, do you know how many troops are left in Iraq? Because they're not all out, are they?
The news article I was reading, there's about 4,000 troops left. Most of them will be out by December 31st. And the news article is reporting that there's only 150 troops left behind to guard the embassy, although I kind of think that we have a higher number of trainers there to help out, and we are going to have a lot of military contractors there for a while. But it's that time of the day. It's about 7 o'clock, and we're going to have to sign off and say to everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and everybody out there, stay free.
All right, see you next week.
Bye.